Well, coming up on today's show, folks, thanks for tuning in. This is the Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ. And we got Russ on a different side this show. Some of his parenting skills, okay, that we're going to get to hear about. Hilarious story with his son when Russ got called in because his son was misbehaving. So we got into talking about raising kids, what Rusty used to do on Halloween. Not bad. It's coming up. And how his days were spent in high school when he was at Notre Dame in Saskatchewan. And that and a lot more coming up on The Suspendables. Rusty, this is an anniversary show. It's show number 20. Welcome, everybody, to The Suspendables with Jungle Jim Jerome. That's me. And we just never know where he is, what part of the world. Rusty, where are you? Where'd we find you now this
Sherwood,
week?
Sherwood, I'm back in L.A.
You're back in L.A.? You were in New York. We had a couple of days delayed. How was that now?
It was great. We had a great time. Saw a show, saw two hockey games. I went to the Canucks jersey and then the Rangers game, lost one, and then they beat the Rangers. So it was good. I was with the Aquilini family, Francesco, Roberto, Paolo, and their kids and wives. It was great. We had a good time, and they opened Oceans on Sunday night. We had a little dinner with the team after, and a big dinner actually, and a lot of fun.
Yeah, so once again, you were just saddled to a desk, Russ, working away hour after
working hour. Working my ass off.
There, of course, the Aquilinis are the people who own the Canucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's their background, Russ? How does someone ever end up buying or owning an NHL franchise?
Their dad, Luigi, who's a great man, mid to late 80s, just going strong, working every day. He came over from Italy after he served a couple of years. You know, over there, they got to serve a couple of years in the army. So I think he came over when he was 22, 24, something like that. And he brought the tools that you, a bricklayer. I don't know what they are. A trowel. Yeah. So he came over and created this empire through hard work. He got into real estate through... he had a landscaping company that got into real estate, into building houses and then buying farms. So now they have 27 or so companies, and one of them is the Canucks, and they own restaurants now and wineries, you know, farms. It's an amazing story how through, you know, kids should have the opportunity to hear his story. I mean, he should be in schools talking about how he did it and how he came over, and now his sons are working for the family, and they're, you know, in their 50s and almost 60, and they're working their butts off and growing the company. And so it's a great story. They're a great family, and I've got to know them over the last few years.
A bricklayer, and now has one of his properties is what's a NHL franchise worth? A couple hundred million?
It's got to be worth close to a billion.
Oh, a billion.
With the building.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, they paid $225 million for it 14 years ago.
Right. So, okay.
Yeah.
I'm probably thinking more like salaries.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Salary cap, what is it, $78 million a year?
The other family story, like, because your brother played in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Blues are just an incredible story. Hockey's a few weeks in now, and some teams are playing great, some aren't. It's kind of boring, really. There's nothing really too exciting that's happening.
Yeah, a little early for excitement.
Yeah, a little early, but there's a family in St. Louis. They don't own the Blues, but they're a massive family. They had 11 or 12 kids. You maybe know them. They were friends of Russ's, and I went down and did a gig for them 1 year.
They're friends of Jeff's.
They're friends of Jeff's,
I'm sorry. The Sansone family.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You went and did a show for Tony.
I did. And these guys are rich.
Yeah.
These guys are rich, man. And this guy, one of the nicest hotels I've ever been to is the Ritz in St. Louis. It really is. Yeah. And this guy rented like four floors to have this party.
Wow.
And I was emceeing the thing. And they're like, they have 11. This guy had 11 children. The father, you know, the matriarch of the family, had 11 kids. and they're all great guys. And I've met a bunch of them. And
his brother had 11. He didn't have 11, but anyways.
Okay. And
he had a lot of kids.
They had a lot of kids, and I was on stage, and they brought up a young girl, you know, one of the granddaughters of the father on stage. And they said, "This is a big occasion." She was like maybe 10 or 11 years old. And I was completely caught off guard when he said, "You know what? She shot her first deer this weekend." Yeah, with a you know, 12 gauge. Yeah. She took it, and everyone's standing going, "Yeah!"
There you go.
There weren't too many animal activists around, you know, in that room. And but that father, speaking of families and working and kids and all that stuff, with all those kids, and they had a huge real estate development company, and he uniquely sat all the kids down because there's going to be a pile of money here at the end when this guy dies, right? There's going to be, so you know, there's a massive company, corporations that's worth tons. Nobody's going to have to ever worry about themselves for the rest of their life. But he sat them down early and said, "That's fine. If we're going to have this company," and he banged off about 7 or 8 different positions that the company needed. Uh-huh. You know, we need an engineer, we need an urban planner, we need a lawyer, we need, you know, this, that, marketing, PR, all that sort of stuff. So you guys go out and get those degrees, and then we'll talk about who gets the company. After, you know,
he's a good guy. He's a really great good guy.
Great guy. And St. Louis comes up a lot now. They won the Stanley Cup last year. Someone tweeted because the Ottawa Senators are in the tank, and what's happening there is sort of worth checking in on if you haven't, because they got a brand new rookie coach, as you pointed out. They got the crazy owner, and it was probably a budget thing that they hired this DJ Smith guy, who's his first time as a head coach. And the Senators have gone for a shit, and they're losing games left and right. And every time they lose a game, Russ, this guy is sending guys down and bringing guys up from the minors. Wow. He's done it like this crazy amount of times.
Now, is this the GM that's doing it? Or
well, I don't know. I don't know. Be. Right. You know, the GM, you would know more than I would how much weight a coach has or GM or who makes those decisions in the end. But it's just something like I've never seen at the start of a hockey year before. I've seen coaches get let go, you know, who are 4-6 and stuff like that. And you go, "Jesus, I guess they're not standing for very much." But this guy is, it's sort of this knee jerk. "Okay, you're done. You're going down." And he's bringing up unproven players. He's not letting players stay very long. He's juggling lines like crazy and all this stuff. I've never seen it before.
Well, in my era in the 80s and 90s, especially in the 90s, when guys started making more, you know, decent money, they would send guys down. And then as soon as they got down to the minors, they'd send them back up. And they were trying to get him to quit. And it worked with a couple guys. But Alexander McGillney was making $5.5 million in New Jersey. And they sent him down. And he goes, "Where is it? I'm going there." And rode the buses for a bit. I don't know how long he was down there. I don't think it was very long. But they were trying to do it. Doug Bodger, Vancouver, called him in just before Christmas and said, "We're going to send you down either." I don't know if you could get sent down before or after, but anyways, they were going to send him down. And Brian Burke says, "I know you're not going to go down. You're going to quit." It saved them, like, you know, he's making 700 grand. So it saved them 350 or 400,000 bucks because he did retire.
But that aside from guys that are trying to force to quit, you do see it once in a while, Russ, where it's all fun and games. Guys go a little bad or guys, you know, miss a practice or something, or they're late for the bus or something. And all of a sudden the coach or GM lays down the heavy hand and goes, "Send the fucking guy down. Send him down for a couple games."
Well, best motivation I ever got in my young career was when I read in the newspaper that Harold Ballard wanted the guy said, "Yeah, Harold's thinking he wants Jerry McNamara, the GM, to send Gary Lehman and Russ Cortnell to the minors. Doesn't think they're fitting it." Oh boy, should have seen my practice after that, reading that article.
Sure.
But I never played a game in the minors, and was quite proud of that. But sure. a couple times, and early on in my career, you know, the old threat. But they worried about some of us. They worry, you know, guys might not be able to handle it. And down there, it was a lot tougher than it is now. And they were concerned that it would just ruin guys' confidence. So they were patient with some of us, and obviously with some they're not. But wow, what a kick in the pants when you for some of these guys, you know, playing in the apple, and then they call it the crab apple. Yeah, you're going down to the crab apple.
Oh no!
Yeah. Well, what do you want on the bus? For you want pizza or do you want Subway?
Yeah, we're not going to,
The apple, it's what do you want, Mastro's or Ruth Chris tonight?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, or Highs when you're in Canada. Yeah,
Highs in Canada.
Anyway, this will be interesting to watch. Something's going to happen with these Sens. It's kind of like they're running amok, and there's the ship is rocky, you know. And if you coached today, Russ, this coach is going, he came on and said, we're going to work hard. We're going to be a pain in the ass to a bunch of teams. And
yeah.
No, I'm from Ottawa, so I see a lot of people tweeting me about this shit, and it's not working for him. It's backfiring. And you brought up about sending guys down in your day, Russ. If you coached, Russ, would it be more difficult because everyone makes so much money? Is it more difficult to discipline guys with the heavy hand, like sending guys down?
I think that does play into it. But I also think that the rules are, it's not as easy to send guys down because of waivers and you play so many games. So it's not like you can send everybody down, because if you do, they can get claimed and you lose the player. And but definitely it's harder to discipline guys today, because I know two or three coaches that are coaching right now that are about my age in the NHL, and they said it's so difficult. Like, you really got to manage you really got to watch what you say. You got to soft gloves. They're wearing soft gloves, today's players. Yeah, yeah. The coaches.
Well, it was like when I was a kid, like in grade 6 and 7, you know, and
you were 18.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the best 3 years of my life, grade 6 and 7. You know, back in
the... You were driving the teacher to school.
When we got shit, it's funny you bring that. I've reconnected with my grade 6 teacher. The guy's retired, lives in Thailand, and I'm having this great back and forth with him on Facebook. Ken Trache, he's a big listener to the show. Back in those days when we were in school, Russ, talk about times changing, what teachers cannot do now compared to when I was like it was I probably got the strap, Russ, 3 or 4 times a year. Got sent, you know, you acted up.
Knocked corporal your hair
punishment
off.
Man, what's that?
Knocked your hair off.
Yeah, knocked my hair. Yeah, knocked the brains out of me, obviously. But teachers grabbed you by the ear, they squeezed your arm, they threw you in the corner, they, you know, they didn't beat you up. But sure was different then. When now, I understand it. Some of these kids in school are telling teachers to F off.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Knowing the teacher just goes like this. Okay. They don't do a thing. They don't do a thing. They can't expel the kid, or, you know, they can't touch them. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. When I went to Notre Dame in Saskatchewan, if you didn't have your jacket, it'd be 40 below outside. You'd come into a really nice warm classroom and you'd only do this once, but Schmaltzy, he was our teacher, and he had a sawed off a goalie stick. And if you had your jacket on after the bell rang, you had to stand up, touch your toes, and he'd give you a two-hander on the ass. If it was a girl or a boy, he would do it. That was my 9th grade math teacher. Oh,
there,
man.
We go.
You only had that jacket on once. Like, oh my God, that hurt like hell. Your ass would burn for the rest of the class.
But don't you wish you could have done that? Don't you wish you could just sort of do that? I do. My kid, when he was in kindergarten, you know, he didn't want to go outside when it came time to go outside. And so much so that the teachers didn't bother with him anymore. You know, he's kicking you're talking kindergarten here, kicking and screaming, and he won't go outside. And then they phoned me, and I had to go down there. And I was like, really? Really? Do I need to be involved in this? You can't get my kid to go outside, you know? And you know what I mean? It's like, come on, you're the freaking teacher. Come up with something. Come up with something, my God. You know? And eventually, you know, I went in and read the riot act with him, and I brought the nanny and all this shit and said, okay, Wyatt, you got to do this, this, and the other thing. And And he said, well, I don't want it. I said, well, if you don't, then we're just taking shit away, right?
Taking stuff away. Okay.
Like your shoes. We're not letting you wear shoes to school.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next day I get a call at the end of the work. At the end of work, it was like 30 below. And he would just walk to school. We're like four doors down from the school. And he showed up to school because he didn't want to go outside. So he didn't wear a jacket.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was his move. Going, can't send me outside now.
Yeah.
I said, that's all fine and dandy, son, until the social service department shows up at our door for abusing our children, not giving them a coat, you know?
Yeah.
Jesus, man. Anyway.
Those
are the days.
Yeah, my son, Lawton, he was preschool, I think. No, he might have. Well, anyways, he was really young. He's at the school in LA after I retired. We get a call from the teachers. We want you to come in and talk to you about Lawton's behavior in the playground. So we're in this classroom, and you looked out the window, and the playground was about 4 feet up. So there was this wall, and there was the playground and this jungle gym. And they're like, well, Lawton, you know, he's a great kid. He's well-behaved, but he plays dangerously on the jungle gym. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, he's really athletic and he can do things the other kids can't. And they're trying to copy him. We're worried one of them's going to fall off and, you know, hurt themselves, break their neck. And we all look out to the jungle gym and he is standing on the very top, like the post, not on the boards or anything, Jesus, or the floor. He's climbed up and he's on the post, like where the flag would have been. And she goes, like that. the substitute ran out there and was like, Lawton, get down from there. Anyways, he didn't want to be in the classroom. He wanted to be outside all the time. So we had the opposite effect, but also we were in California, not in freezing cold Edmonton.
Right. My old man had the best advice ever. And I only appreciated it, you know, that same white noise you hear from your parents when they're trying to discipline you, going, you know, one day you're going to have your own kids, you know, one day you're going to have your own kids. And as the joke goes, and I said to my dad, so are you. No, just kidding. and then I had kids, you know, and to try and discipline them, you know, I said, I got to ask Rusty about that today, you know, because my dad said, I'm going to tell you something. There's going to be two doubting experiences you're going to have in your life. Two of them, hands down. The first one is the price you paid for a car. He said, you're going to walk away going, I know they fucked me here somehow. I know. Like they're not giving these things away, but somehow the guy convinced me I paid the lowest price on the planet for a car, you know? And,
yeah.
And the other one is how to raise your kids. You know, it's just sort of a completely doubting experience all the time, right? From the time they're born to, you know, my kids are pretty normal. They're healthy and happy, but I got no idea. I got no idea some days when my kids coming home failing.
That's why your wife got full custody of the kids.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But so we all know. Why are you? Is it you feel like you're at a meeting? You're admitting to your alcoholism and drug addiction.
I was never going to bring
a fucking studio apartment.
I was never going to bring that up. Yeah. Anyway, stop it. Anyway, a lot of it has to do with luck. That's what my old man told me. He said, look, good kids turn bad. Bad kids turn good. Some are sleeper. You don't see it coming. And other ones you do. And he said, I'm telling you, you do the basics and the rest is luck. The rest is luck how your kids are going to turn out. And I always thought that's kind of
I don't know.
What's your thoughts?
I think kids are a reflection of their parents and how they're brought up. That's kids are sponges and they learn everything from their parents, and they might have outside influences, but the reason they have an outside influence is because the parents aren't paying attention to who they're hanging out with.
Well, I agree with some of that. You know, that there certainly are examples of that, but you gotta believe, Russ, that you and I know some fantastic parents, you know, great parents, and their kids are a handful, you know, and have been most of their life. You know,
you know what? I know fantastic people who weren't good parents.
You're talking to one. I'm a great guy. I was a shitty father.
Yeah. I know some great people who just shouldn't have been parents.
Right.
And they were shitty parents, and now they have shitty kids. So the best advice I ever got about raising kids. Cause like you said, we don't, there's no handbook. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. You get up and
right.
try to take the best experiences that your parents passed down from them to you and help out with your kids. Try to do the same or better. And this neighbor, her daughter was in our kitchen going, I want this, I want that, I want to do this, I want to do that. And she goes, right now, you want me to be your friend, not your parent, and let you go do this? And I'm not. I'm your parent. So get outside, play with the other kids because you're not going over there. And she turned to me and she said, our kids want us to be their friends and then their parent. She goes, and if we do that, we'll be their friends now and their parents forever. She goes, if we parent now, we'll have a friend forever.
Oh, right. Right.
And so I really took that to heart, and they're great people. They're great kids. They have a great mom. She gets most of the credit, but you know, they like hanging out with us, and we were tough. Like we disciplined them if they needed it and mm-hmm. kept them on the right track. And so far, knock on wood, they've all been good. I mean, they're normal. They've had issues, but most part, they're really good people. So,
yeah, I got sucked in a couple times, you know, with the naivety that my kid, that can't be my kid. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My kid wouldn't do that. And sort of in the back of my mind going, oh, fuck, he might, you know, he might do that. I remember my old man got called in one time because I didn't do a big assignment in grade 11 English. And he was funny. And the teacher hated me. She absolutely hated me. And she really liked the idea that she got to get, you know, that a parent had to come in, you know, for this private meeting with the teacher. And she was the devil, man. She hated me, but I was a handful. But I remember my old man had the assignment. She handed it to him, said, look, he never did it. It was a 2-month project. It came his turn to present it, and he never did it. And my dad had it rolled up, and he went, oh. And he looked at her, and he said, well, here's what you should do. And he started beating me over the head with the papers, saying, just whack him in the side of the head a couple of times. Give him a good one, baby. A good blow to the sternum, you know, something like that. So you can't do it anymore. Speaking of that, Rusty, I've got to do a sponsor read.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we've got you're listening to The Suspendables, which is on a platform of podcasts that's put out by Global Story Network, and they have a bunch of other ones that they're starting. And one of them is called Datitude. So if you like our show, why don't you check out more podcasts by Global Story Network, like Datitude, a parenting podcast no dad can do without. It sounds like I should be tuning in, Russ.
There you go.
The hosts tackle all types of parenting challenges, from how much screen time is too much, and when did having a vasectomy become a dinner table discussion? I don't know. Hear it all on Datitude. Head to globalstorynetwork.com or search Global Story Network wherever you listen to your podcast, and that's a new one that's up there. So we're giving those guys a little boost. And, geez, maybe.
Maybe they'll have us on their show.
You think they'll phone us, Russ? Phone a friend, how we raised our kids. Anyway, tune into that, Datitude, new podcast on Global Story Network. Or if you've got an idea, they're open. They're open to many ideas for new podcasts. So they're a front runner on the podcast platform, and you do well to get involved with them. By the way, Russ, I'm about 50 coffees in.
Uh-oh.
But you and I go back, and we got some history, and I'd like to tell you, I'm 9 years now, Russ, clean and sober.
Nine?
Yeah. Yeah. 9 years. I remember when you told me when I quit, you said, I'll give it till March.
Well, we had you at our event in 2003, the Courtnell Celebrity Classic in Victoria, when we're raising a bunch of money for mental health, which we've talked about, and you were outstanding. You were hilarious. And then in 2004, you came back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, something's up. He's just not on his game. And I know, and I noticed you were doing the fake drink in your hand. You had ginger ale to make it look like a Ryan water or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went up to you and I said, "Hey, are you off the sauce?" And you were like, "Yeah, I'm trying. and I didn't tell you you weren't as funny as the year before. But anyways, we're all really happy for you. And 9 years is something to be said, big fella.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I appreciate it.
Keep her going.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Thanks.
I'm sure there's people out there listening that are in the same boat and really appreciate, you know, hearing somebody else, especially somebody like yourself that's gone through it. I know my brother hasn't had a drink since 2010.
Yeah, Jeff. And, yeah, because we've had some great talks.
Yeah, and so he's super healthy and living the sober life. So there's lots of people out there doing it. And so hopefully we're cheering you on and Jeff and everybody else out there who's doing on that same path.
Yeah. You know, I get asked, Jeff's funny, man. Jeff, your brother, is really funny. He's dry. He's weird. You know, he's out there, super smart guy. You know, he just, I remember when I first met your brother, Jeff, coming away going, was he making fun of me there? You know what I mean? Like he's got this great, crazy laugh and stuff. But I remember talking to him about it because we're about the same, you know, we're that long now without having a drink or a drug.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, what was the tipping point for you? I mean, there's, you know, I got, you know, the tipping point for me. I mean, I used to be at home saying, okay, I got to go out and get high, man. I got to get out of the house, right? I had a wife and kids.
Yeah.
I got to go have some drinks or something. And all of a sudden I just snap out of the chair, you know, and go, oh my God, I got to run downtown. I got to do a gig. It's Friday afternoon and I'm supposed to be at the law office entertaining. And my wife be like, what? I got to go. And I'd walk out the door and, you know, I'd go through the whole charade, shirt and tie, fucking the driveway.
No.
My neighbor's sweeping the driveway. All I'm doing is going about 10 minutes from my house to the bar.
Yeah.
You know, and the dealer behind the hotel and my neighbor's sweeping his driveway, looking at me there's just sweat pouring down me. I'm running out of the house. He goes, where are you going? I'm going, yeah, I'm going to go hit some golf balls.
Yeah.
There you go. in a shirt and tie. I said, yeah, you know, I'll change when I'm there, but excuse me. Anyway, I remember saying to Jeff and we laugh about it now. And I said, what got you to stop, you know? And I think he said something like, you know, this father came up to me after a game and he was coaching a junior team, I think, at one time, years ago, was it? A junior A or B team. And he said a father came up and he probably did what most of us want to do with a parent. And he said, I swore I would never do this. And the guy was yelling at me, and I shoved him.
Actually, it was a coach of the other team.
Yeah.
He said, but it was more than that. That guy deserved to be shoved, actually. That guy pushed a player when they were running around the rink, and then Jeff went up and grabbed the coach.
Well, I don't blame him for that.
Yeah. He deserved it. But he was making mistakes, life mistakes.
What do you say, Russ? Speaking of some of that, old players that you used to play with, this is not very good news. I don't know if you heard it today or not, but Dale Hawerchuk, who you would have played with, who played, I don't know, 14, 15, 1,700 games or something in the NHL.
Oh, my God. Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer. He's got stomach cancer.
Yeah.
This broke today, and he's on a feeding tube, and he's been through chemo, and he's talking about it. And I know Dale, not as well as you would. But I've known him over the years. And I said, I got to ask Russ this because unfortunately, when we get to our age, Russ, this shit is, like I say, I'm afraid to answer the phone if I don't recognize the number, because it's going to be bad news about something. You've played with guys, Russ, over the years. You knew guys who played before you, and I know you're still connected to a lot of those and a lot of the alumni guys. And there's stories like this happen all the time. Sometimes I don't want to dismiss that this isn't tragic for Dale, but even guys who are younger that happens and get cancer. And I say, I got to ask you, what do you say to those guys, Russ? If you've got to pick up the phone and phone a guy when you've heard this terrible news, how do you deal with it?
I think pulling for you, we're thinking of you, you know, just try to be as compassionate as possible and know that I think people are thinking of their thoughts are with you, and hopefully you feel better, you get better, and you know, I think that's all you can do. I mean, they're already in that position of how ill they are and
right.
potentially dying of something that, you know, you can, some people can, we've all heard the stories of people coming back from some really bad illness and making it. And so
yeah.
there's always hope, I guess, trying to give somebody hope or just, yeah. you know, that's all, I think that's all you can do. I don't know.
I never know what to say. That's
I know.
Why I ask. I just,
yeah,
like,
it's tough. It's like, you know, I love my wife. She goes, so how are they doing? You know, like they're going through divorce. I'm like, well, I didn't ask them, like, hey, right. hey, how's it going? Are you guys okay? Like, you know, of course things aren't okay. You know, it's like, just don't ask.
Well,
and hopefully okay. if they're, you know, I think if that person's going through something and feeling like they want to tell you something, I think just listening to them and they get to tell you what they're going through or,
right.
or, you know, I'm going to make it, I'm going to beat this, you know, let them speak and you just listen.
Listen, Russ, the last thing, like I live up in Alberta, man, it's rural, you know, it's blue collar, man. Right. And, you know, there's these farmers couples, you know, they've been together for 60, 70 years. You know, it just doesn't happen. That the last question I would ask anyone who lives in Hollywood and Los Angeles is, you know, what is it? The divorce rate? I mean, it's through the roof. God. You know, yeah. I wouldn't. There's the one guy I told you I play golf with. He says my wife and I were going to get divorced, but nobody wanted custody of the kids. Anyway, good luck to Dale Hawerchuk. I know you. I know you played with him, and he was a great player.
Yeah, he's a teammate of my brother, so I'm sure Jeff has spoken to him. I heard about it through one of his Dale's best friends. So, and I can't remember, was it 2 weeks ago or a week ago? He just said that he wasn't doing great, but
yeah, he's on a feeding tube. And yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, jeez,
not good. But Rusty, what else do we have? Let's see. Let's look at my notes here. Hang on, Rusty. Check the notes. Oh yeah, Russ, the federal election took place yesterday in Canada, and Justin Trudeau is back in. That's about all I have to say about it. I agree with your take on that, Russ, 100%. Anyway, there. Yeah, off and running. I'm glad it's over. So that's just.
You know what? There, we got a really nice email from Rick and his brothers who listened to the show. And his brother had a horrible accident when they were.
I'll find it for you here.
Yeah, they were racing go karts and stuff. And the three, yep. I think the three of them listened to the show, right? And they're.
I will read it for you.
Yeah, I had it and I lost it. I'm not very technical, so excuse me, but.
Let me find this thing here, Russ.
Here we go. It was from Rick McMullen, and I don't know where. Just want to let you guys know you have one hell of a show. Myself and my brothers all listen and think it's great. Here is a little history on my brothers and up playing hockey just north of Toronto. And as we got older, played in the city AA, AAA hockey around the city. At the same time, we raced go-karts and cars professionally. When my younger brother, Rob, was 19. Hello, Rob. Thank you for listening. Rob, I just want you to know that we love that you're listening to our show, but my younger brother, Rob, was 19. He had a bad accident that left him in a wheelchair, paralyzed from the neck down. Needless to say, some days are better than others. And you know, we put a smile on his face. So, Rob, keep listening to the show. If we ever get to the point where we can send you guys something, we'll send you something, but we don't have anything. They just said if there's any t-shirts or hats or would be amazing if we could send. But anyways, Rick, it was a nice note you sent us. And Rob, thanks for listening. And I know your favorite guy is me because Jim's a fucking idiot.
Well, what makes it all worth it, you're right, is what he said here. Is needless to say, some days are better than others, and he gets really depressed. But when we're listening to your show, he lights up and he smiles from ear to ear. And
neither one of us ever thought we were going to do this show. So, you know, it puts a smile on our face that we're doing this and that you are enjoying it, because neither one of us, or at least I didn't think I'd ever be doing this show.
We never thought we'd last. Yeah.
Thanks, Bill Yeti.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. And 80,000 people now have downloaded the program.
No!
That many. Those are downloads. You know, the listenership is slightly different than that. But we've only done 20 shows, and we're creeping up towards 100,000 downloads. So we really appreciate that. Rusty, I've been, I don't know if you, it's Halloween, right, coming up. And I threw out a little tweet the other day and on Instagram. I'm eating those fucking little chocolate bars, right? They're just driving me bananas.
Those are for the kids, you idiot.
I know. No, I'm buying boxes of them. I buy boxes.
For the kids.
No, I don't get kids at my house. I'm in a townhouse complex.
Oh, right. They're too scared to go to your neighborhood.
But when I'm at the store, because I'm a fat bastard, I'm buying these boxes.
We've all
seen
your Instagram.
Yeah, and people look at me. And I go, well, it's Halloween. Yeah, I got to get them for the fucking kids. Yeah. And I eat half of these on the way home. But did you ever go out? Did you ever go out for Halloween?
I loved. Are you kidding me? We had no dough growing up. I mean, I had a beer brewed as soon as I could say, as soon as I knew how to knock on a freaking door.
Right.
Our people didn't recognize us, the Courtnells, when we were kids, but they recognized our shoes because we were in every garbage can looking for pop bottles and cans so we could go to the store. So our shoes were hanging out of garbage cans looking for stuff. So I, Halloween, are you kidding me? Free candy? I would take out my pillowcase and I would freaking sprint as many houses as I could get to, fill that sucker up, go home, dump it on my bed, and go again.
Oh, you double load.
I went and went and went until I was, you know, I don't know what time my parents let me stay out till, but there was a deadline and I had to be back. And so I loved Halloween.
My dad had a deadline too. My mom and dad, and it was like, if Halloween was on a Thursday, you know, my dad said, you keep going there till next Tuesday, okay? We're fine. You get my fuck out of here. I got every time I bring up Halloween or kids bring it up, I have a friend, Daryl Morrow, whose nephew, Joe Morrow, is playing in the NHL. And Daryl played in the he got drafted by the Oilers and never played very much, but he was a farmer. He grew up as a farmer. And he always tells this hilarious story. He goes, so when I was old enough to go out on my own, I ran up to the end of my driveway and then turned left and had to go 5 miles to the next fucking house.
Oh, my God.
He said, if I covered four houses, it took 3.5 hours. You know, everyone's got 150 acres here, pal. Halloween? Jesus Christ. It's the worst thing ever. It's just, it's absolutely the worst deal I've ever had. Anyway, as we speak, how did your Vikings do, your son?
Oh, my daughter's boyfriend, they won. They won. They played great. They beat Detroit, and a huge game for them, divisional game. So things are, you know, they're playing well right now. He is playing great. He's finally starting to get some press there that he hasn't got in a few years. You know, he's 5 years now out there, and he's the reluctant star athlete. You know, he's that guy that comes up the hard way, and it's just Eric Kendricks, number 54. If you get a chance, watch him play. He's so good. He leads the team in time. But they're all good. They got a great team. Anthony Barr is great. Their defense is awesome. But, you know, I just love bragging about my boy Eric. He's doing great.
So we'll ask you before we wrap up the show. Oilers are off to their best start in a while. In fact, they're tied.
Why do we have to talk about the Oilers every show?
Well, fuck, it's better than you talking about the Leafs for all the time or my great time with Montreal.
I don't even know the record. Like well, you said, it's early. Like
they're 7-1-1.
Oh, of course you know their stat, but you don't know what the Leafs are. I mean, who knows? It's the first 10 games. Come on.
Listen, Russ, if it wasn't for Wayne Gretzky and the Edmonton Oilers, I'd be fucking dead right now, okay? If it wasn't for those guys.
Of course.
Anyway, they're on the shoot. They were in fact, at the time we're recording this, though they were down 3-0 to Mini. They've only lost one game. They are, they're 7-1-1, actually. They lost in a shootout the other night. And so they're talking about streaks, you know, best starts. And I said, I got to ask Rusty, were you ever part of a really big, long winning streak or a losing streak? So much so that players started to do like stupid, superstitious shit to try and either keep it going or break the bad streak or what, you know. Professional athletes are way more superstitious than people think. And when they hear the stories, people just roar out loud. But have you ever been involved in something like that, Russ?
Well, I played in Toronto and I loved the Leafs, obviously my favorite team growing up. I got drafted there, but we struggled. So I was part of that era where they were wearing the freaking bags to the game, the bags over their paper bags over their head, Jesus. And then throwing the jerseys on the ice. I think that was one of the first times, you know, that ever probably happened in the NHL. We might have been the team that it happened to. But anyways, I left the Leafs, and you know, we had some fun there. We also we had some losing streaks. Right. But I get traded to Montreal, and the first 22 games, I think we might have lost one and tied one. We won every. It was like, so I go from not, you know, from not winning a lot to like, okay, what are we going to win by? And my first year in Montreal, I was 23, and we were we lost that year in the finals to Calgary, and they beat us for the President's Trophy by a few points, but we had, I don't know, 118, 120 Jesus. Points. Yeah, it was awesome. So So I've been on both sides. I've been on a team where, yes, we've had long losing streaks and then long winning streaks. So one is way better than the other.
Yep. There's no doubt about it.
You come in the room, you come in the room on a losing streak like that, and you're like looking around to see whose stall is, you know, the guy's stall's gone, all his equipment. He's either gone to the minors or he's traded.
Yeah.
Who's going next?
You know, whenever I ask that question about, you know, superstition and, you know, players put the left sock on first or whatever, or they only drive this way to the game or whatever, you know, tap the fucking post when they come on the ice or whatever they do. And I remembered a coach when the team was on the bad streak, and someone asked him about superstitions, you know, to try and make light of it. And he goes, yeah, I have a superstition. When we go on streaks like this, I send three guys down. That's what that's how superstitious I am. That's what, like he was just listening to the guy. He was like, are you a fucking idiot reporter asking me about, I'm going to turn the statue on my desk, you know, just hoping we start to win. Muzzin, I don't know how they pronounce his name, defenseman
Muzzin.
For Toronto.
Yeah.
So Toronto, they're high expectations.
Yep.
Am I right, Russ? Is this one of the probably most promising teams they've had in all the years?
In a long time.
Yeah. With everything aligned.
Yeah, and the expectations for all teams are high, but when you're in Toronto and Montreal and New York, a lot of the big cities, I guess, but boy, oh boy, Toronto, I remember when we barely got into the playoffs and we swept Chicago, who was one of the best teams in the league. And they were, Harold was like calling the police chief going, you know what? Better get that that parade planned.
Oh,
out
no.
Now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, Harold. No. Oh, no, Harold.
Oh, boy. So, you know, they, like the Yankees, they expect to win every year. Yeah. You know, Leafs do this. They've got a good team. They got a really good team, but it's not easy. As we witnessed last year in the NHL with St. Louis, last place in January, and then go on to win the Stanley Cup is a feat that's unbelievable. And if you're one of the 16 teams to make it to the playoffs, you are one of the 16 teams that can actually win the Stanley Cup. And it never used to be like that. But with this salary cap and the way the teams are, 100%, you can sneak into the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup. It's phenomenal. So every city is so fired up, and they're fired up right now just to make the playoffs because they know if they make it, they got a chance.
Right. What's unique is they lost a couple days ago, their last game or something. They lost 4-3 in overtime. This defenseman, Muzzin, who's having his best career start. Okay. Whatever this Corsi stat is, Russ, it's shots attempted with when you're on the ice with the most shots attempted against and all this shit. Anyway, that's one of the
analytics, which is new.
New thing in analytics. Yeah. Anyway, the short of this is that the guy's having a great year. He never speaks to the media. He's painfully shy. Really? He never says much, but by most accounts, the best player on the Leafs right now. And he does an interview yesterday, which is rare that he even does it and holds his cards really close to his chest. And he, after this loss, and he called out the team, which can happen, right? Where you say, we're not very good, right? There's a bunch of guys in the team. We're not playing the way we should. But he really didn't, Russ, call himself out individually.
Right? Really?
He didn't. No, he did. He, at one point, he did say we as a team.
Yeah.
But, you know, usually a lot of guys, if they're going to say we got to be better, you made this point a few shows ago saying,
yeah,
there's no upside to ever doing it. But this kid went ahead and did it.
Wow.
And so it made the news today.
Oh, boy. And they're running with it.
And they're running with it. Yeah, they made a bit of a story out of it. I got to ask you again, you know, do you think it's – now, he's got the stats right now because I know you did
yeah,
say –
Yeah, but you can't –
Shut your mouth if you're not playing very well.
You know? Yeah, you can still say we all have to be better, including myself. And, Wayne Gretzky probably said that over the course of his career, not in the five – the years in Edmonton where they won every freaking game. Right. But I'm sure that all great players usually say, we have to be better, including myself. And then that way he's pointing a finger at everybody, including himself. You just can't win
press.
Yeah. You just can't go there.
I like it though. I like it. I like it as a fan. Fucking something different. You're not getting laid.
Yeah,
shit.
I think we love it. I like the rebel too. I like the rebel, but I don't like the selfish rebel. Rebel without a cause.
Yeah. Great movie. Okay, Rusty. Speaking of that, Rectify. Good show on Netflix.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's an old one from 2013. Yep. My little Netflix update. The Guilty is another good one.
Hmm.
Yep. There's some shows because I know you're a bit of a Netflix guy too. Russ, we're out of here. This is our 20th show that we've just wrapped up. And over the next 10, who would have thunk? Over the next 10, we're going to get the odd guest on. We're going to.
Really?
It's taking me. Well, I say that unless I have to push the buttons to bring the guest in. We could be in trouble, but we're gonna try some of that over the next several weeks in doing the shows. We thank everyone for listening. Again, Global Story Network, there's another podcast they're doing called Datitude. Check it out at globalstorynetwork.com or Global Story Network. And wherever you listen to your podcast, you can see that. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Russ, I've got no final thought. Do you have any final thought? Yeah, that's about it right there.
Nope.
And again, I think to Rob, thanks for listening. We're glad we're helping you out with the good feelings. And we're coming back to you each and every week. On the Suspendables, Rusty, go after it again. Let's get another claw going. All right.
Okay.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you.
All right, buddy.